Okay, this is like our second pantry. It's like our fridge.
Right, yeah, because I completely lied to everyone. I was having a Christmas mom stuff this morning. I never mind the fact that my phone was broken. I lost my laptop, so I had to spend £350 with dad home. Like, no, I hadn't been a great Christmas. Aside from, I got a guitar.
That was nice.
That was awesome. Like, incessant.
Yeah, I feel like you've got to come up with an intro.
It just was weird because it was like it's the thing my wife knows about me, but I forget like that I'm a bard, I guess, because like I put it in my hands and all of a sudden I just wanted to play.
Yeah, noodle,
and she was just smiling because my daughter just comes sits right next to me, right, and is like, "Daddy, you play pretty good," and I'm like, "Not really, but yeah, thanks, kiddo. I play better than a lot of other people you'll see play." You know, play my guitar and do it a little. What are you guys talking about?
What are you guys talking about?
A little chatter chatter there. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of What Are You Walking? What are you guys talking about? We are in the in-betweeny here. This is like the I thought I'd really like the four-day holiday because I had an incident and an emergency. Mm. I have hated the fact that we have 4 days of a holiday as opposed to two because...
Well, yeah, I worked, so, you know.
Oh, my God. Normal why are you working and the boiler people not working? Yeah, like, doesn't make any sense.
Panto is essential.
You just keep getting phone calls. They're like, we're really short on numbers right now. I'm like, the world's not coming to an end. I just need a new boiler or a new part for my boiler. Anyways, folks, so yeah, I'm a bit grumpy this week because my boiler broke on Christmas Eve, which, you know, everybody do a sob story for me. It prevented me from seeing my daughter open her presents on Christmas Day, but by breaking the sound barrier and the speeding tickets will shortly be in my mailbox, I'm sure. I got up there by midday up to Hull and managed to get the Christmas dinner in with everybody and enjoy that. And I had a really good time. So, you know, cheers to all my friends and family up there. You know, despite all the hassle I've had in the past couple of days, you guys always make it better, so thank you very much. But today, we are going to talk about... Actually, it's appropriate to mention them because we're going to talk about one of Becky's recent favorite horror films, Dr. Sleep. The sequel to The Shining, I believe... Now, I don't know, and I don't know if it's on your Wikipedia page there. Was this an actual book that was made?
Yeah.
So this
so
is
Stephen
an
King
adaptation
wrote...
of a book.
Yeah, he wrote a book.
Okay, directed by Mike Flanagan. Mm-hmm. Wonderful film. We'll do first impressions really quick here. Mm-hmm. And actually, no, I got to do brass tacks.
Oh, yeah.
Brass tacks. www.lovevictoriaproductions.com. That's our website. Everything's on there. I tell you that every week. Please, please go and check it out. There's lots there. Some of the pages have so much trouble loading because we have so much crap on there. So it's not going to stay up forever because next year I've got to make this slimmer, streamer, and whatever. Half this stuff's probably going to go behind a paywall or something like that. So please, get it now while you can, folks. You can hit us up on social media. Ed Burgos, Jason Shiro, Love Victoria Productions have a page. LinkedIn, we have a page for Love Victoria Productions. Instagram, Enano LVP or Jazzy J Shiro. Twitter, at Mouth Love Victoria or at Ananoski Prod. And finally, at LVP Film Life, which is just TikTok. I just don't. The problem I have with TikTok, Ed, is I don't really want to be on it. Like, it doesn't. I don't mean that in any sort of, you know, egregious way to anybody else, but the 15-minute clips that I have on my phone that come to me are just stupid. Like, really stupid. And, like, I guess it kind of makes me sad because I'm like, with 15 seconds, you could still be very artistic if you tried.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And some people do
and
some
instead,
pretty cool stuff.
People want to put like Tide pellets in their mouth or burn their hands or do something stupid because they want attention. And I'm like, this is the same reason I'm not always keen on reality TV. It's like, yes, it's still art, guys. Like, it is in a very base kind of way. And, you know, do I think it's going to be Shakespeare? Like, I don't think so. Like, I just... You know, I have, you know, Quibi was supposed to do that. Well, that was all the guys got in on that, what was it, 15-minute videos. And that dropped like a lead balloon across the world. So anyways, that's all the ways you can get a hold of us. First impressions, Ed. Dr. Sleep. Ooh, this is going to be an interesting one. Who is it for? Who is it not for?
That's a real... It's always a hard question.
This one, I think is specifically, like, difficult because... Yeah. It's a film we really liked and we know other people that really liked, but I could see a lot of people being like, this was dumb.
Yeah. So we've talked quite a lot about the idea of nostalgia and bringing stuff back around. We've seen some pretty bad examples of it, I think, with like Bill and Ted, for example. And we recently did one which we really enjoyed. What was it? I can't think.
Spider-Man.
Was it Spider-Man? Yeah, maybe it was Spider-Man. Just kind of bringing stuff back around. And I think that this falls into the category of like a really well done job. Just in terms of like a great film, really entertaining, not maybe the kind of stuff that we've been talking about recently where we're talking about Denis Villeneuve and, you know, a certain kind of high-level artistry.
Ooh, I would counter, though. Okay. Because I think, you know, this is Mike Flanagan. Like, I think he's that talented.
Okay.
And I think that's why I love this one so much. This was very much Denis Villeneuve to me. This was another director.
Auteurish.
Who put his own stamp on a very, very difficult piece. Now, the name Mike Flanagan, like, I know it, but I need you to Wikipedia, because what else has he done?
He has done a lot of stuff with Netflix. I saw he did The Haunting of Bly Manor.
Okay.
And Haunting of Hill House as well.
Okay, because I know the guys at Fright Fest are always talking about him. I don't know if he's done some indie stuff with them as well. He did
Midnight Mass this year, which
It would be then. Then it's like, because he gets a lot of props from the Fright Fest crew and stuff like that. Partially, I guess, for some of the stuff he did in Dr. Sleep. And shout out to McLeod, by the way, who's in it.
Yeah.
I had to pause that particular section. When your friend's in it, you're like, oh, there he is. But yeah, this is an auteur film.
Oh, and he did Hush, which I really liked.
Oh, that's the one then. So Mike Flanagan doing Hush, that's probably what broke him out with the horror guys I hang out with, because Hush was amazing to everyone. I think that was another one that, see, I should have known, it was another one that Becky liked. We watched that one, she's like, that was actually really good. He did
Ouija Origin of Evil as well, which I've never watched any of the Ouija films.
They're all good standard horror fare. Okay. Like, you can't go wrong with them. They're not horrible. They're not gonna, like, you know, like, horrible's hard to do in horror anymore, I think, because you have franchises that build. But, you know, when I mean horrible, I'm like, some of the Paranormal Activities will bore the hell out of you. You know, obviously all the old franchises and some of the Saw films, like, they just go on and on. The
Screams.
And stuff like that. You know, you can watch them. They were scary. It was whatever.
Yeah.
So, but that's my point, is, like, he puts his stamp on two different authors that he's combining into this, because that's hardest thing about taking this, and we're going to get straight out of good, you know, first impressions real quick with this, because I think it's an important point. Like, for this, guys, you have to, if you're an appreciator of Stanley Kubrick, watch this film. If you're an appreciator of Stephen King, definitely watch this film. Because I do feel he lent more, slightly more, towards King than Kubrick, especially in the director's cut. We're going to talk about that, because Ed didn't watch it and I did. We're going to talk about whether that 30 minutes is needed or not. But watch either, is what I would tell you from the first impressions. It doesn't matter. You know, you'll understand the thing from it. But if you like King, or you like Kubrick, or you like The Shining, like, this is why you should watch this. It's worth your time.
That's where I was going eventually, but
and that's about it, really. Like, I think if you're not on that bandwagon, I wouldn't watch this, because I think you'll find it slow, and I think you'll find it really hard to follow at times, because, you know, the thing that I said to my wife after watching, I said I really enjoyed it, but I kept pointing out plot holes to her, and I was like, that didn't make any sense, and that didn't make any sense, and that didn't make any sense. And so if it's a film that you're going to get on that path with,
right.
then you're just going to go off the rails midway through it, because it's a long movie. So by an hour and a half, you're going to be like, there's too many points in this that don't connect and that don't make sense. And we'll talk about those in the bigger discussion afterwards, but it's just so you know that. Don't put on this 2.5 or 3 hour film and think, wow, this is going to knock my socks off. It's going to be the most action-packed delivery. It's not even The Shining, okay? It doesn't have the same power that Kubrick had. That's Kubrick. Yeah. That's why he's a legend, because how he did it, why he did it, I don't know.
And I think maybe that's kind of where my maybe backhandedness with it was it isn't Kubrick, but God damn, it's a really good film.
It's nostalgia to Kubrick. There are, you know, it was funny because we were watching, and this isn't making fun of my wife. It was just, she was like, the opening shot came on, and she was like, it's Kubrick. I'm like, no, it's not. I said, no, that opening shot from The Shining, every director, anybody with a camera that loves camera work will know that, how he did that. But then the shot is repeated later, you know what I mean? Yeah. So it's the kind of thing, there is a lot of homage to Kubrick, really there, but it is not Kubrick. And it's not saying he's not as good as Kubrick, saying...
It's different. He's not trying to be Kubrick.
He's not trying to be...
Which is definitely a pitfall that he could have gone down. And I think you're absolutely right. This felt a little bit like the old school Stephen King kind of movies and stuff.
And there's almost like a universe that he creates in there, which I'll talk about, because there were some references that he makes in the movie, and I don't know if it's the director's cut or the regular cut, but he makes some references that I'm like, those are referring to some of his other books.
That's cool.
So he does that. And, you know, any writer would do that if they were writing, you know, he writes so much.
Have you ever watched that Castle Rock TV series.
No, I heard it's amazing.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Mark Bernardin, who's he was one of the writers.
Yeah, I heard it was very good. The one I heard it wasn't as good as a comic book, because there was a comic book called Lock and Key made by his son.
Oh, okay.
And apparently the Netflix show doesn't hold a candle to
okay,
it.
Okay, yeah. Know what I mean? I tried to watch like the first 10 minutes. And I was like,
yeah, no, that's how Becky told me, and then I didn't watch it. So that's what we'd say. If you want a nice, long, horror, meaty Stephen King horror, meaty, this is meaty guy. Yeah. There's a lot of parts going on here. It has that it phenomenon where he creates this world that you're kind of in, and all of a sudden you start accepting his ridiculous rules.
I really like the lore and the...
It is. It's just, as I said, when we get to my criticism, because I'm always a critic of something.
Fair enough.
There is definitely, like, his lore always has so many holes in it.
Yeah, yeah.
And the minute I say him, you'll be like, yeah. And I'll be like, yeah, I couldn't get over some of those things. But I did. You know what I mean? I didn't want to get over him.
Yeah, I didn't bump with very much on this one, I've got to say.
No, not at all. Okay, so quickly, if you want.
Yeah.
Because for me, it'll be quick. What did you watch this week?
So I went down a Spider-Man rabbit hole.
Did you?
I really, really did. So first of all, I really enjoyed Andrew Garfield in Far From Home? No Way Home.
No Way Home, yes.
No Way Home. I really enjoyed him, and I was like, I'm going to rewatch
I've never seen those two of them, right?
Yeah, there's Amazing two of them. Spider-Man. So I watched the first one, and I was like, that was really good. And then I just ended up watching the second one, and then I was like, maybe I'll watch the Tobey's ones as well. And then I watched the first one of Tobey's, and it was so... Oh,
that's Kirsten nostalgia, Dunst, man, for us. That came out when we were...
Like high school, university?
Let's talk about Kirsten, please, yeah.
I know, I'm sorry, but I was like, okay.
At least you get it now.
Yeah. Oh, wow. And just her as Mary Jane Watson, and all the things that I loved about Tobey Maguire.
Kirsten Dunst will always be my Mary Jane.
Yeah. And then Emma Stone as Gwen Stacy is really great as well.
But I've never seen that from Amazing Spider-Man. So this is why I've got when I have money again, because another funny thing that happened to me is I had an incident where I forgot something over in Hull and needed it back, which cost a 350-pound courier. So I will not be buying any movies for a little while.
I think they're on Netflix though. At least the Amazing Spider-Man ones.
Yeah, boy, free stuff.
Well, something you paid for it.
Something I like. I could. That is. I love how you just gave me that look too, because that is the middle, like the day job in me. It's like, oh, free stuff. I have a subscription to that, but I don't ever look how much I pay. So.
But no, they were really, really good. Then I also I was in a musical nostalgia mood.
Ooh,
so
okay.
I started watching Jesus Christ Superstar, which is
that.
On Prime.
I love the film. You know, the funny thing about that is, like, I love the film. I don't love the play when I see it live.
I've never seen the play.
The film just has, like, the rock helmet I need
it's
for
so
it. Like, it's
70s.
Just so... And I still would have loved them to go with the original concept, which was to use Yoko and Lennon. Like, I would have loved that. Yoko and Lennon playing, like, her as... Sorry, Yoko. I don't know if you could have sung Mary's parts. Because Mary in that, she has such, a critically awesome voice.
And I actually watched Frozen again, which I hadn't seen for a very long time.
Man.
And that is a good film. The music is
Some
fantastic.
Parents have put that. So I have not watched Frozen in a very long time, because when it came out, my daughter was 3 and I had to watch it at least 100 times.
Yeah.
And that's not a lie. So you hear that from parents, and especially from a parent like me, because I exaggerate about everything.
Mm-hmm.
You'd think, oh, he's exaggerating. No, I watched it 100 plus times, guys. Like, my daughter would watch it 3 to 4 times in a day.
Yeah, that came out when I was in Korea, and in Korea they just went crazy for it, and it was playing all the time in the cafes.
My favorite Frozen moment was actually, I think it was at Fright Fest when we did the karaoke, and Mitch came up to sing Let It Go, which is, favorite for his, and then I was, like, singing along, and it was like, everybody was like, how do you know the words to this song?
Yeah.
I'm like, are you kidding? Like, I've heard this song a billion times, it's awesome.
And then last thing I started to rewatch, because I kind of stopped halfway through, was The Witcher. And I'm enjoying it much more this time around. I feel like I'm paying attention.
I hear you got to get past like episode 1 and 2, and then you're fine. Then you're on the track. Because my father-in-law loves that show.
Yeah.
He knows I love the video games.
Yeah.
Played them all.
And it's right in our wheelhouse, right?
It's fantasy. It's one of those things.
And I have a newfound appreciation for
Henry Cavill.
Because, he paints little toy soldiers like I do.
I don't want to say he was a shit Superman, because that's not fair.
Yeah.
It's not fair to him.
His Superman was a bit shit, though.
It was.
Yeah.
It was. Like, and it's just because I like him. I'm like, I think he's a really talented actor. I'm like, I don't know why your Superman didn't come out. I think some of it's, you know, again, I am not the biggest Zack Snyder fan, as everyone knows.
So anyone who's listened to this podcast ever knows.
Knows that, like, in poor Zack Snyder, I'm going to meet him one day, and he's like, I would have hired you, like, 10 years ago. You're an asshole. I'm like, yeah, I hear that all the time. You know what I mean? So, yeah. Yeah, I'll give The Witcher another go. It's on the list. Like, it's like, you know, Arcane season comes two, first,
right,
you know?
Yes, you have to.
But season two, I heard, is even better. And it's got the plot with Ciri and Yennefer and all that. And, like, I love all that stuff.
Right,
like,
right,
I just
thought
it was really cool in the video game.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully it's even cooler in the movie.
Yeah. So what about you? What have you been watching?
Not much, to be honest. I finished Swagger, finally.
Oh, nice.
And that was awesome.
Did it have a good ending?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's it'll just take you by surprise, that show. Because it's a drama. Like, it's not... It's not a basketball show. It has a lot of good basketball in it, but it is not about, you know, it's about their lives and what it's like, and what, you know, especially the way it represents being a young black male in that situation is just, I mean, that's why Kevin Durant's bankrolling the whole thing, because he saw it and said, yes, we need this. What I like about stuff like that is the same reason I liked Black Panther, the same reason I personally love Donald Glover for Camp Childish Gambino. Donald, like, you have given me a CD. I literally listen to that CD every day now, because it makes me feel better about me. Because a lot of the stuff he talks about it being mixed and not understanding black shit versus hood shit and all this stuff, like, it's everything I, you know, can remember of being awkward because you're in between. This is all about, like, that position for a young black male growing up in those areas. It's one of the least talked about stories in the world. It needs to come out. And this is just a story about that. It's not, the basketball is like what gets you in the room.
Incidental almost.
Right? Yeah, yeah. All the other stuff's what you should be paying attention to is what is this kid's life like?
Right.
Like, and how is it that he gets to live that way and all these other people live this way just because of the color of his skin and stuff like that. So, you know, I watched the end of that. I don't know if I've gone further with Lovecraft. Oh, I did. God, we could talk the whole podcast about Lovecraft.
Where'd you get to?
I got up to our episode, Me and Daegu.
Sorry,
I know. Then I'm going to be like, no, I got to our real episode, the next one. And then I'll be like, no, I got to our real episode, the one after that. Because we loved, that was the trilogy. We loved that one first, and the next two.
Yeah.
And then the problem was, we loved them so much, then the last two were like, man, whatever. You
know, like, it was
however, however you want to end this thing. The only thing we remembered about the finale was, I'm still going to love that when it's Dee and the... And the monster or whatever it is, the whatever. That's one of the great scenes in the last episode.
Yes. Because
it makes you think, like, ooh, is that going
to
be a show? Yeah.
Which, by the way, I want you to think about this as we go. But think about, like, child characters that you would like to see another film about. Okay? Because I think that's a good category. Anyway, let that percolate.
Ooh, I'm going to percolate that. Yeah. I mean, Meet Me and Daegu, like, first of all, guys, the fact that where we used to live, like, is in the title of anything. Daegu's not like a... You know, I went there because it's where the job was.
Yeah.
Like, I knew nothing about Korea to begin with. And I didn't want to be in Seoul was the only thing, because I was trying to save money. So, you don't go to the big city if you want to save money.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Daegu will always have a place in my heart. As I said, I always plan on retiring there and just moving up to the mountains and, like, just living there and teaching kids. But the fact that it takes place there, even though it really doesn't, you know what I mean? You see, like, 2 seconds of Daegu and the whole thing. It still means a lot.
Just the whole culture and everything and the fact you know, the whole Fox of Nine Tails part of the...
It's just, you know, that's the kind of stuff.
And the Mudong as well, right?
Right, the and Druid. It's like, and I hate to say that, like, it's exactly like when you had that band when you were in high school and you were like, I found him first.
Yeah.
Like, it's exactly how it is with me. I'm like, I love these people because I
with
feel
that
like
with Korea
I kind
general.
Of fell, we fell in love with it before everyone else did. You know what I mean? And we still are very much in love. As I said, if we ever get this film thing really into high gear, we'd love to go back over there and shoot some stuff with our friends that are over there. So
I'm planning on trying to do some reaction videos for Squid Game, because I haven't seen Squid Game yet. And I thought it might be interesting content.
Very good, yeah.
But yeah, that's because of our
reaction videos, and everybody loves Ed. And Ed's not like this at all. I'm the one that's like this. And we were making fun of this 2 days ago, that if you really want my attention, be someone's famous, because all of a sudden I will drop everything to be like, hi, are you famous? Oh my God, I'm Jason, and this is blah, blah, blah. My wife is like, if you're not famous, in other words, he will not pay as much attention to you. So, but with Ed, he's not like that. Ed has the complete opposite of that. He doesn't care if you're famous, not famous, whatever, but... Tell us about, if you see someone you know, or you're trying, like, tell us, man.
Yeah,
it's cool.
For sure,
like,
for sure. I will.
Your Korean connection is always really dope to me. You know what I mean? I think that's awesome. But the episode itself, the other thing is, I love, Lovecraft Country represents, you know, I was just reading, you know, a No Film School was talking about how to get an agent, a manager, blah, blah, blah. And one of the things, it was an interview with a manager. The manager is saying, like, you have to talk about films and things that you would want to make or that you wish you had made. Lovecraft Country, still 100%, I wish I'd written that. Mm. Like, that's how I see a good horror. Mm. That's how I see a different take on...
So good.
And it's so just unique in its own right.
It jumps.
There's just nothing like it out there.
That the episode when they go down into like the underground and it's like an Indiana Jones
kind of that was the adventure. Fourth episode, right? But then you have the, I mean, there's just so many side elements, and then there's the whole thing with oh god, rest in peace, you know what I mean, like with his dad who's gay, and like there's things
that's
like,
right, Michael Caine,
this is what I mean. I went back to Watchmen, and this is why I went back to Lovecraft Country, because people are going to forget very fast. It's a commentary I'm quickly going to make that's been percolating in my head for about a week. Like the problem I have with streaming is how forgettable it is.
Yeah.
Okay, movies in the theater are not forgettable.
It's an event.
Because you go sat and you watched it, right? All this shit that comes out is, and Netflix, you are the number one for this.
Yeah.
All this shit that comes out, and like you watch it for 1 minute. You may have even watched it, but you'll forget it because the next thing's out the next day. Mm. And it's like cable TV.
Yeah.
And it just demeans kind of what's going on with it. So Watchmen and Lovecraft Country, like I was like,
they've been lost in the mix.
They'll be lost in HBO Max now because people will be like, oh, I already saw that 2 years ago. Like, yeah, but you haven't seen anything as good as this in 2 years. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, that good. So the episode was just magic. And Jamie Chung, Jesus Christ. Like, so is she Korean?
I think she's half Korean, half Chinese, or
I didn't want to say because the last name wasn't, you know, and we're not like that, but you know, listen, we lived in Korea, and so you recognize the last names because there's not many. There's like seven or eight that are really common, and then the rest maybe. And it wasn't Chang is one, but Chung is not one. So I just wondered, and it was because she does an amazing performance.
Yeah,
you know
she's
what I mean?
Fantastic.
It's her Korean is spot on. You know, like that's. That's what did it for me, is that it doesn't mince with that. It just dives into the language and the culture. And even the shot techniques.
Yeah.
Like, it's like they got a... it was the one thing I wish you could have seen at the Edgar Wright premiere. He talked all about his DOP, who's the guy that does Park Chan-wook stuff. Sympathy. This guy, he's like, the funniest thing is, this guy, he said, he's like, he's the goofiest guy in the world. And it cracked me up because like, he does these really serious Korean films. And then on set, he's a total jokester. Kind of reminds me of Sash. Sash is like that.
Yeah.
Sash, you know, there's the Circle of Evil with Hitler. But man, the amount of Hitler jokes they had on set for that thing.
But yeah, Jamie Chung voices one of the characters in Arcane as well.
Does she?
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah, no,
very
she's awesome. That's it. I'm going to have to revisit that as well.
It's one of those things. It was this time last year that we were watching it, so I was, you know, I do try to do some, like, pick a couple things that I'm going to go back to, because this year, I would say, like, it's something I will tell you, again, this is also supposed to be an educational tool for other people like us that are filmmakers. Like, one thing that I ditched this year was going back to things. I only really watch new material. Why? Because there's just so much of it. So if I take time to go back through my DVD collection,
I feel
like I'm like, oh, I've seen this 100 times. I need to watch. You know, and part of the reason I'm also spoiled, as I said, because my day job is profitable and does well for me, like I'm able to have 7 subscriptions to the thing. So there's not much you can't watch at my house anymore. You know what I mean? So, but
I just renewed my Disney Plus though for a year because
that was your Christmas present
last year. That's right. Because I'm not missing Book of Boba. That's out tomorrow.
No, it's the kind of thing. Netflix would be the only one I would drop because I don't care. But my wife has enough shows on that she likes that whatever. But you know, Apple TV couldn't get rid of that if I tried. No. You know, Apple owns my life. I was laughing. My brother-in-law Dominic, I told you, is really cool, and we hung out all over Christmas and stuff like that. But he's like me; his whole house is done in Apple. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we were just joking about that like we should just sign a contract and just give us stuff the rest of our lives.
Yeah.
But I think that was pretty much all I watched. It was Christmas this week, so I wasn't parked in front of a TV. You know, and I've got I'm back at my my day job. I'm finally at the new job, so that's another thing. Is I'm quite a bit busier with that than I was with the old job. Not that I wasn't working at the old job. It's just I have less time to sit and chew the fat.
Gotta impress.
So that's about it. Let's talk Dr. Sleep, man.
Yes, man. Let's do it. Let's.
So
where do you want to start?
I don't even know. Like I want to save the criticisms for the end because they're small. You know what I mean? And
how did you feel about Rebecca Ferguson? She played Rose.
Yes,
in the Hat.
So that's a great point to start because, as you know from Dune, I didn't, and I'm wondering if I'm gonna like Zendaya. And I know I would never say her name right, do I? Is it Zendaya?
Yeah.
Zendaya and her in the sequel.
Right.
Because
right.
they have a bigger role once you get to the siege and things go on there. Yeah. I'm giving them one more before I'm like, because I didn't really like Rebecca Ferguson. I just didn't think she was the right person. Sean Young plays it in the old David Lynch version.
Yeah.
You need someone really regal. And she just doesn't look regal to me in that. Like, she did in this. Mm-hmm. She does. I remembered she's the Greatest Showman woman. Like, yeah, I loved her in Greatest Showman.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I went back and looked at her, like, filmography. I'm like, I haven't seen her in much to begin with anyway. She's in all the Mission Impossibles, but I don't watch those. Mm. I love how they've already got two in production right now. I'm like, ugh, this is how Hollywood burns itself alive. You know, stop giving Tom Cruise money. He doesn't need any more of your money. Sorry, Tom. I know you're a good guy. I loved her in this. Like, that is her best role that I've ever seen her in, as Rosie the Hat.
Yeah, yeah, she was really good. I liked her.
Enchanting, charming, but also she has this way, and this is why I think she'll be a good lady, like Lady Jessica, if she can pull it off.
Mm.
To do the role she had in this film, you had to be sensual, you had to be beautiful, but you also had to be sinister.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So she, you know, the opening scene does it perfectly she's with Violet.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, the second watch of that was actually better than the first, because the first time you see it, you're still not quite sure, like, what just happened.
What's going
to you?
On? Yeah, yeah.
Second time, you know what she's doing to that kid, and you're like, wow, she is evil.
Yeah, yeah.
Because she just, the way she can dead glare at that kid and not make a move, like, Rebecca, do you have children? You know what I mean? Like, are they scared of you with that
I
face?
I don't think I would hire you as a baby.
The only thing I would laugh about is she's Rebecca Ferguson and she has an Irish accent in this freaking thing. She's Swedish. You know what I mean? And I was like, stop trying to hide that you're really Rebecca Ferguson Sorensen. You know what I mean? You're Swedish. That's why you look beautiful. You know? They stole all the good looking girls and took them to Sweden.
But I
loved her in this. I just thought she was amazing. She was and it also has one of my favorite, this is one of my guys, has Zahn in it, who's a native. He's a Native American, well, he's like half native, half Latino.
Yeah,
but he's the guy from, he's in Res Dogs as the cop. I love him. Like, I just
he's also in Hawkeye.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. When I saw him again, I was like, this guy's getting good now.
Yeah. That was
much love for my native pride. That's right.
Ewan McGregor. I mean, he's the kind of.
I just have to make a side note about this. There's not even enough of us natives to make like a gang. You know? Like, we can't be like Latino bread because there's not enough of us. You know what I mean? We've been exterminated.
Yeah.
Ewan McGregor.
Yeah.
How about you? Because I went on. So
I'd forgotten how much I like him as a leading man.
That's exactly what Becky said.
Yeah. Like it got me excited for like Obi-Wan, for example. I remember saying that out loud whilst I was watching him. He's just really grown into himself.
He Jesus Christ, right? So the reason we loved him in Trainspotting is how human he made that character. Mm. Because it was us when we were that age and we were all crazy and just trying to, you know, figure out what we were supposed to be doing with our life, and that's why we listened to Underworld, blah 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 blah.
Did you ever watch T2, by the way? The kind of sequel to Trainspotting.
No.
Okay.
Like, I heard some very disappointing things.
A lot of people didn't like it. I loved it. Okay. I would love it if you watched it just
it's, so it's that
I
can hear. It's the same reason I haven't watched like the sequel to Garden State.
Okay.
Even though I love Kate Holmes, like that's one of my favorite actresses from Almost Famous.
Okay. Yeah,
she replaces Natalie Portman's character in that. But like it went over like a wet balloon. And I think the problem with that was it was Zach Braff talked about our 20s perfectly.
Right, because
our 20s was more like our teenage years because that's what's happening in the world right now. Right. Your 30s is your 20s and your 40s is your new 30s. Woohoo! You know what I mean? Like, good for us.
Yeah.
But Ewan McGregor, though, I've seen him in a lot of crap that I didn't like between.
Of late, right?
Yeah. And even that documentary he did, I want to go back and watch it because I kind of panicked because I watched like the first one and I was like, this is just you on a motorbike. You're being Bono here, just showing off how much money you have. You know, like, I want to travel the world too on a motorbike. I just don't have enough freaking money. But listen, like the acting in this one, I can't say how spot on it was.
Yeah.
It is exactly what it needed to be because it's real. He really delved into it. It was almost method acting. Like he sounds, looks, acts like a person that would be in this situation, like Danny. And I just couldn't believe that because that's such a hard role, right? Mm. How would you act if you were a person that had those kind of powers but was also an alcoholic and had gone through all these things? It's a completely unbelievable character. He makes it incredibly believable by being so human. By it's like
trauma.
Everything and, the trauma in the beginning, but that's, and some of this is also how the movie is made.
Mm.
So what they did really well is that traumatic in between where he's like the drunk.
And, yeah, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
There's that awful scene with the woman and the kid that come back later, right? But They only hamper on that.
I literally thought, like, fucking Paul Ewan McGregor, like, he's just got this thing for, like, dead babies.
That's right, right? Yeah, yeah. But they, what I liked is they didn't dwell on that because it would have really, like, it really defines his character. Mm. But then you get the 8 years later is more who you're after.
Yeah.
And he, once you get to the 8 years later, like, he still has the scars, but he is one of those people. And I don't know, maybe that's true to life for him. I don't know if he had his own bats with addiction or anything like
quite
that.
Possibly,
but
yeah,
the
yeah.
way he talks and the way he moves so eloquently about everything and the way he's like so calm to Abra, you know what I mean? It's just, it was magical.
Yeah,
like, I was just like, you're capturing fabulous. This.
Yeah, yeah. He was really, really good.
You know what
really
I mean? Good. And so, you know, I loved all that. I loved, that's part of why I love this movie, is it like, it has a really... You know, Stephen King. Stephen King, I was going to say, one of his qualities and disadvantages is that his stuff always feels real to me.
Mm.
Sometimes it makes it not scary.
Mm.
So sometimes his horror is not horror to me because I'm like...
It feels thrillery.
Yeah, it's like, we're all, you know, we're in the suburbs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's scary. You know what I mean? Like, ooh.
Yeah.
No, shouldn't say that about it, though. It still scares the shit about anybody.
No, yeah, it's a very good point. You know, I still haven't seen part two, though. Mm-hmm. And I know you keep telling me, like, don't bother.
Don't bother. I think it's just part two was always like that, though. Part two with the original one from the 80s was the same way, because you were just like,
I think they did quite a nice job with it in terms that it was like TV, right? It was like a part one, part two on TV.
That's right.
And
this is what I mean about Stephen King. So Stephen King, this is a Stephen King film, so I can get a little criticism here. I just want to get them in because I like to get my points in. But no, Stephen King stuff all has that kind of like happy factor at the end, and I'm never into that. Which is funny because on The Creepshow he wrote is one of my favorite things he's ever done because that doesn't have the happy ending. It's covered in the fungus or whatever it is, and he just has to shoot himself in the head. Like, that's still one of the scariest. It's just creepy. You know what I mean? Like, the whole idea of it is just creepy to me.
But I guess maybe that's one of the reasons why he's also become so popular is because it is very digestible, you know?
That's the thing. So that's where I get it. This is a guy who lives, breathes, and does this. Like, he knows better than I do about what sells. And unfortunately, those happy endings do sell a lot better than those tragedies. And so, yeah, it's just, that's my always thing with him is he always has a happy ending at the end of everything he does. And it's like... Horror films aren't like that. They're tragedies, you know? Like, usually someone...
I mean, look at Ari Aster and, you know, like his...
Exactly, like, right? Like, that's just bleak ending, and, like, you know, nothing is going to be well ever again. But that being said, in Dr. Sleep, I needed it here. Like, on this one, like, the ending here, I was like, okay, everybody's okay now.
There was a very, like, I don't know, halfway through, I was like... Was this... Because I didn't know that there was a book originally. It took me, like, reading through the Wikipedia page and stuff after the film. But I was like, did a fan write this? Is this, you know, someone who just loves The Shining and loved the character of Danny? Because I also always seem to forget that it's all about Danny in The Shining.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know why.
Have you read the original book?
No.
That's the thing. So many people... So here's your first bit of, like, something you may not know. Okay, the book, it's not, like... Listen, it's just different because it's not Kubrick, right? Like, Kubrick changed a few things, but it's just the
style. And famously, Stephen King was not happy.
Exactly. The style of the book is different. It's a good book. That's the reason I say that. Like, normally, because Becky was the one who got me to read it, because I was I like the film, and I've seen all the films. She's like, no, the book has a lot of different things in it from the thing. If you don't want to do the book, there's a made-for-TV version of The Shining, which was shit, but it is more like the book. Okay. It has all the different things in the book because... There's just a bigger interplay between Jack's alcoholism, Danny and what that means, and then the wife. And this interplay, the three of them, it's more of a family story. How the hotel takes that from them. Kind of makes it, you know, that's the...
See, it makes me want to read the book.
It's good. Mm. It's really good. I never read this book, but this was the sequel that you were talking about Danny afterwards. What did you think about that? So the fact is, I mean, this will all have to do with contracting and licensing and money.
Mm.
You know, the fact that we didn't get Shelley Duvall back, she doesn't act anymore, she retired.
Mm-hmm.
And this was made right around all those, you know, it was horrible what they did to her, Dr. Phil shit. Shelley Duvall is one of the greatest actresses of our era.
They kind of broke her.
No, they deliberately did it, and it's horrible. Like, you know what I mean? She was a wonderful woman.
Stanley Kubrick was a little bit famous for stuff like that.
Yeah, and even she talked about it, though, and said, you know, like, I was an actress, okay? I did what I was supposed to do, but then Dr. Phil gets her on and just bleeds her on it.
Right,
and it was like, you're an asshole, mate.
Right.
So, but you couldn't get him. You couldn't even get, you know, Jack Nicholson doesn't come back, you know what I mean? So we get another actor for that, another Danny, you know what I mean? What did you think about all that? Did that...
It didn't bother me at all.
It worked really well, I thought.
In fact, just the little flex and touches, it felt like an homage. eventually they go back to the hotel, and I was like, yeah, here we go. Like, it got me pumped when they did stuff like
that. Okay, so there's director's cut. So if you want more build up, there's a webpage on this that talks about any of this anyway, so I'm just basically parroting what it said, but I agree with it. Mm. One of the, it said like top 10 things about the director's cut. One of the things is the build up. There's more of a build up to go to the hotel throughout the director's cut. They just threw in these, spliced in these quick scenes where it would be like, thinking about this.
Right.
And, oh, this character and doing this thing, and not too much. Yeah. There's more of that. There's more explanation on The Shining from, is it Carl?
Yeah.
The black character?
Yeah, played by Carl Lumley.
I think that was, I mean, that was, you know, you're like, Jesus. You know,
I love Carl Lumley as well. He played the black Captain America in...
That's right, Captain that's right, America. That's
yeah,
right.
He's one of those guys.
So, I mean... There's a little bit more detail to kind of talk to you more about The Shining. Because the other thing I like about Stephen King, and I just wanted to put it in here.
Mm.
The reason this film works, guys, is because Stephen has researched this, okay? The Shining thing he's talking about, now he's kind of made some of his own rules for that. But that is something, if you Googled it, you would hear about people that talk about this.
And it's like folklore kind of stuff?
Kind of. I mean, it's talked about my family a little bit because a few of my relatives and whatnot can see things and stuff like that. And that's generally how it's talked about. It's folklore like that. Yeah, like sat around in tables talking about it. But that is exactly how it's described. That some people have it, don't know that they have it. It's your ability to find things that are lost. Like that scene when he talks about finding lost keys, knowing things before they happen, doing well on a test and you're not sure how it happened. Yeah. Those are all things that like have talked about at my family table before. You know what I mean? And talking about the weird and the mystical or seeing dead people that way. You know what I mean? So he's definitely gone online and read reports from people that are talking about how this works and how they feel there's this connection. And, you know, you can go further than that and go into, like, the Sylvia Browns and people like that that try to create. And I do think it's creation because I don't know how much you could possibly know about this other world that's supposed to be there. But people that feel like they are in that other world and they can see things and they talk about angels and demons and things like that. But
is the knot, is that, like,
something? No, that was something, like, I think, I don't know. He, like, that felt creative.
It sounded very cool, though.
Well, it's just the knot that can't be unbroken. So, okay, but that was my first plot hole from Stephen King.
Go on.
Okay, so you have this group of immortals, right? They're like vampires, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
They all die by a gunshot wound in one scene. They've been around for centuries, except two guys with a gun took them out. Like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, they've lasted this long until two guys with deer rifles decided to take them out?
Yeah,
like, are you fucking kidding me? And I'm sorry, that was the point where I was like, all right, I'll accept this
barely. I will let it go. Yeah, I didn't bump with that. I like the scene is like, it's very well edited because then you've got the Rose and, you know, Rose the Hat like reacting to the deaths and it has a lot of impact. But yeah, I was a little bit,
so that's how it happens in the book, I guess. I would not have taken out the full crew in one go like that, you know, like it's almost as if, oh crap, I gotta get rid of these characters because we're gonna have
it. Oh man, poor Billy. Oh, at the end of that scene.
Which one's Billy?
His friend. Where snake.
Oh, bite, yeah. Where, no, like, I mean,
kill yourself.
That's the other thing I would say. We should have put that in first impression. Yeah. So just if you watch this and now you're like, fuck you, Jason, there were some really disturbing scenes in there. Like, I'm really, really sorry. It should have gone in the first impressions. There is one scene that I even texted Ed when I watched it today because, like, I just can't do it. Like, it still makes me upset. Like, I'm going to cry. It's horrible.
Yeah,
like,
it is.
It's truly horrible. And they didn't pull... They pulled the punches at the very end by changing the sound. Yeah. And I was pissed. Because I was like, you should have done that at the get-go. Yeah. I don't want to hear a little boy screaming like that. It was so wrong.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. It has the desired effect. Yeah. By the end of that scene, as I kill all of those motherfuckers. Like, every single one of them. String them up. You know what I mean? Like, but... There's that. There's the death of the father, which is so nonchalant.
That
I was like,
you know,
like, you just killed her dad, and she's not even like, well, dad's okay. Like, no, he's not. He's fucking dead. It's your dad.
I didn't bump with those moments so much. I think just because it, even though it is long and there are slow moments, once some of these things start happening, it's picking up pace.
It's the joy of this film. You know, it bumps with me, but that's afterwards. Like, I was still watching the very end. That was a good film. You know what I mean? My wife, you know, who would call stuff like that out, she didn't care. She was like, yeah, it's all right. So
I kind of expected a little bit more from the snake bite character. I don't know if there's more in the...
I think this, no, there's not more in the director's cut, but this is what I mean when... This is why I watch the director's cut, because you want to watch this again. Mm. And then read Mike's statement at the end, because it's so cute. It's just like, I just wanted to thank everybody. Like, especially you and you and you and you. Thank you. I had so much I had to cut from this film, because we just had so much fun.
Yeah.
I'm sure there was more. And there's more in the book, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But
that's
part of the problem with adapting Stephen King books, right? They're like 1,000 pages long. Yeah, so, because he likes to develop his characters out. Yeah. And I thought she was a well-developed character. Mm. You know what I mean? There was her, there was Daddy Crow, and then there's Rosie the Hat, and then the grandpa,
and then the Chunk.
Chunk, you kind of know because he has the glove.
Yeah,
and then there's the other two. One of them is the Nick Flanagan, so the director's brother or something like that.
So maybe the one with glasses.
Yeah, and then it was maybe his girlfriend. There was a pair like that, and then there's the black woman who's just by herself, and it was like, we're just not going to talk about her. Okay. So, wow, that's not typical.
What about Abra?
Love the character.
Yeah.
Love the character and love some of the, like, I don't know if it's deliberate or not, but they do foreshadow a bit too. Mm. Because I love the interaction between Abra and Rosie only because Abra doesn't understand that Rosie's actually trying to warn her at times. And be like, I was just like you.
Mm.
You know, and like, you'll do anything, you know, when it comes to you dying. Yeah. And so she's trying to say, like, don't hate on me for doing what I did.
Yeah.
You have more power than I ever did. Right. And I bet you when you come to the end of it, you're going to fuck somebody up.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing. You see Abra hurting people and not really caring about it. Yeah,
like being like, so they deserve it.
That was the only thing is like, I almost want the sequel. You know, it's like, show me
socio... And hence my question.
Yeah, show me sociopath or Abra because she comes across a bit that way. And that's the only thing. Like, she's, you know, at the end, Ewan McGregor does the whole thing to try to patch it up and be like, no, there's good in you. And I'm like, Ewan, like, I think you're throwing a big benefit of the doubt there, man. Like, you know, like...
Well, I think it's interesting because, you know, he obviously had... the cook character, the guy played by Carl Lumley, who's from the original, right? As his kind of like mentor guide, like Jedi ghost. That's,
I love all those scenes. Yeah. I love the last one when he's like, you have to pay it forward. That's what I loved about the realism, because there could have been a speech, there could have been something else, but no, he's really practical and says, you had help.
Mm.
Help the girl. You know what I mean? Like, what's wrong with you? Yeah, that's how we would say it. You know, that's how you would say it. Like, come on, man. Like, that guy bailed you out. Mm. Bail her out.
And Danny, man. Like, I
young Danny,
Like, young Danny was amazing. The moment when he goes into the bathroom with the granny in the shower and he closes the door behind him, which is then mirrored later on. Oh, I fucking love that so much.
There's another pretty cool scene though, and I had to kind of like research it a bit, but I loved it once I figured out what it was. So in the director's cut, there's a scene where he goes, he's talking to his mom, and he looks at his mom and she can't look at him and she keeps looking away, and she's like, and he just says like, oh, you see dad in me, don't you? So he goes in the bathroom. And it was really kind of funny because at first, when I saw it in the director's cut, it looked like it was a continuity fix.
Okay.
He changes his eyes from brown to blue. Because I don't know if you noticed that little Danny has brown eyes and Ewan McGregor has blue eyes.
Right.
And so, continuity error that, you know, God, just watch Old. Have you watched Old yet? I told you that had some of the best continuity errors ever. Like, just, why can't they keep the same eye color? They're not going to change eye color from 12 to 15. Jesus. Why did you just not cast actors with the right eye color? You know? But in this one, it's because he wants his mother to be able to look at him.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that was powerful because it was like, oh.
Yeah.
And I love deep stuff like that. Yeah, that's the director.
Yeah,
that's
the
like showing it so you can say. Yeah. So I had to look it up on Wikipedia and say, why did you do that? Oh, that's so wonderful. That's so nice. So, but wonderful performance from the child.
Amazing. And then just like the character himself, the arc that he goes through, like you said, that dark period that we witness and stuff like that. Like,
it's the other cool thing about the director's cut. I'm going to do this to you a million times.
I get it.
There's chapters. There's chapters. Okay. Just like a Quentin Tarantino film, there's chapter. I think there's six chapters.
Gotcha.
And so it helps you kind of do the progression of it better because it'll be like chapter one, this. And it's like, okay.
Yeah. But the kid actors, wow, did such a great job.
Abra, I mean, what else has she been in?
Like, honestly, I don't know. She's obviously very young. She voiced young Nala in The Lion King.
Okay.
That's her first.
Right. That's where I've seen her as well. I just saw the picture on Wikipedia and I remember.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting and awesome to see where she goes because she was incredible. That was part of the reason this film was so good is the acting performances
were really good. Just I don't know if that's point.
Flanagan getting that out of them.
Yeah, or just good casting. Or just getting good
casting on that one. You know, he had such a powerhouse for all of that. But even, like, this is where you get to say McLeod, you know, did a good job. Because even the side characters, McLeod Andrews, one of our friends, plays one of the monsters at the end, you know. Like, they all did well, you know what I mean? All, even if they have a bit part, everybody was on point
the whole
time. And that's what I really, that's what makes a 2.5 film go. Yes. Is when it doesn't 100%. Have any moments where you're like, oh. Because there weren't any, were there? I can't think of any that it slows to the point where you're like, oh, can we just skip this scene?
Not really. I mean, like, at first I was a little bit on the fence with Abra, just because she was very nonchalant about her father dying and stuff like that. But I think that was more the character.
Well, and I think they present, because Danny's similar, though. Danny, like, talks about the flies on his mother's face, and you're like, how can you even say that? It's like, then it started making more sense why she'd be sociopathic, but it didn't make me disagree with Rosie the Hat, because I was like, this is how you'll become this way, you're just exposed to all this death and disease, and, you know.
And then, overall, the cinematography and the look of the film, I was watching it and I was like, okay, yeah, it does what it needs to do. And then they start doing the camera.
It does turn more so and stuff like that. Some of the things that really struck out to me is the way, like, take the scene. So one of the really good scenes, if you want to see just how Michael Flanagan is subtle with movement but works it really well, watch the scene where Abra goes out to see Danny on the bench, and it's just a shot, counter shot, shout, counter shot. But then he moves it a bit closer, a bit closer, a bit closer, and it's just, again, maybe it's just me picking it up for the sake of picking it up for the day, but this is showing you how you're building tension and importance, because as you get closer to their faces, we're starting to get to the point of what they're talking about and why they're meeting in New Hampshire and all this stuff, and that takes intelligence. You know what I mean? That's a good director that's setting it up for you. It's and
good,
saying
good cross
now shot. As we get closer, this is the point you really need to pay attention to, because this
and
is
not
the next
every shot
point.
Needs to be, you know, an oil painting.
That's what
know?
I mean. And then there were plenty of normal, like, there, because that has the white establishing saying, here's the park bench, here's where they're going to go. This is all very standard stuff that you would just, if you're doing your shot list, you'd write it out that way. But then, like, and then he has his moments where he's like, we're going to do the Kubrick shot.
You know, I love a good camera
turn.
Oh,
man. There were so many good ones like that.
There was some really, really good stuff.
And then the flashbacks are handled really well. Like, those can be done terribly. Yeah, like Dope Sick, like I told you, like, was one of my qualms about watching the whole thing now. And I get why they did it, because have you seen the last episode yet?
Yes.
Okay, so that's the other thing we watched this week. We watched the last episode of Dope Sick. And there is a big reveal at the end that makes you even more pissed off than you were before. But really, like, it also felt like a hit piece to me, because I'm like, and it's not, the Sacklers are not cool people, like, don't get me wrong, like, I'm not trying to say that, like, there's anything right about this, but tell the story from beginning to end, because that will show you just how futile this whole thing is. Like, the way they present it is like there's some great victory that we've all had for this. That's not true, and it still isn't true in America, you know, and that's the problem I had, is like, I hate when TV shows try to make it look like a situation is better than it really is. The opioid crisis is alive, well, and they still can't get anybody in jail. Do you know what I mean? Like, so don't sit there and try to make it look like, oh man, we had these champions. Like, I totally appreciate Rosario Dawson's character, and who plays the DA? Yeah, the DA.
The assistant DA. Peter Skarsgård.
The main one, not the secondary one, because I recognized him. I didn't recognize the main guy. I did, but he looked older to me than I'd seen him before. Like, he'd been a previous actor.
I mean, Peter Skarsgård, who's one of the Skarsgårds.
Okay.
He's the one who's married with the black woman.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, that one. Yeah. Like, I've seen him in other stuff, right?
Oh, yeah. Like, he's one of
them. He looked older, like, to me.
Yeah, he's they kind of 80s him up a bit and stuff. Like,
okay, yeah.
You know, like they did with the O.J. Simpson trial with seven people.
And I get, like, I totally, like, okay, man, like, whatever that DA agent, those guys did is amazing.
Yeah.
You know, what Rosario Dawson did is amazing. What they managed to do is awesome, but don't... Fine, make their lives about something, but don't try to make it look like everything was all
one. Yeah,
you know what I mean. Yeah. You know, really,
mission accomplished.
Really, what they wanted to do, because they want the Emmy, and that's fine, because I thought the performances were worthy of it. Is they wanted the Michael Keaton focus? They wanted this kind of, because his is the redemption story.
Yeah, 100%.
And it's like, I get that. That's the through line that carries you to the end of Dope Sick, but. I'm sorry, I've just ruined the whole show. I haven't seen it. But for me, it was like, don't make a TV show.
I get it. Triumphalism and stuff like that. And yeah, the whole flitting backwards and forwards.
Just because we have that problem with the left right now, being like, we win. Yeah, it's like, it's not about winning. It's not about winning.
Yeah. I think, you know, there's an element of sometimes people are trying to be clever, you know. And I don't know if you saw but The Big Short is up on Netflix again, and I think I might give it another watch.
Ooh, that's the there were a lot of comments made about that because his new one's out on Netflix. Mm. That's Adam McKay.
So oh, that's right. Adam McKay's... that's another thing I watched this week. By the
did
way,
did you watch?
I did watch it. Well, don't I completely look forgot. Yes.
Wow. Okay. I want first impressions.
Okay.
Should I watch it? Should I not watch it?
I think you should watch it, but I think you might hate it.
Okay. That's what I thought. That's yeah. I was pretty sure. Yeah. I mean, the platform alone is enough for me to be like, sucks.
Yeah.
But
it's got J-Lo in it, who I know you love.
And I do, but I usually most of her modern performances I've hated. Like,
and Chalamet's great in it. Like, I really like.
Who's he playing
that? He plays kind of a small role, but he's kind of one of my favorites.
See, anytime, this is funny because now I've got lots of people doing this. Anytime somebody talks about Chalamet, they kind of give me that look because I do think he's like a young version of me. I'm like, that's little Jason.
Yes. And you tell us.
All the time. Every opportunity. I could have been that guy. I could have been a contender. I could have been a Chalamet. I could have been.
But yeah, it's funny.
I just had to read an article this morning where it said, I just turned 26. I can't believe it. I was like, fuck off.
Yeah, fuck you, fuck Chalamet. You. It's definitely funny. I think it's preaching to the choir in a lot of ways.
Yeah, so that was the criticisms from Variety, which is where I get my reviews from generally. Like, that's what I read, you know. It's you know, my morning news for Hollywood and stuff like that. And they said, listen, like, Adam, we love you. Mm. But you're shouting at people that already understand what you're shouting about. And the people who don't understand what you're shouting about, A, aren't really bad people. This. Like, this is the whole thing I'm trying to get through. True. To people. Like, yeah. 50% of the world's always going to do that, right? Like, don't hate them. Like, they are just people stuck in their own heads, you
although
know?
Jonah Hill plays, like, the president's son. And
he's supposed to be like Donald Trump Jr. like a so moron, good. Right? But then also has Meryl Streep, which is not, again... Sorry, because Sophie's going to come over here and slap me because I don't like Meryl Streep.
I love her. But, you know, I mean, yeah, I think you should watch it, but you might have a little rant on here.
Be prepared to come on the next podcast and totally shit all over it, right? Okay. But absolutely. Adam McKay, Big Short, because some people were like, well, I don't know how good he did. I love The Big Short.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Because it like has reference to me. So I was a lawyer that did cases about all of that. That was my early legal career, was dealing with the financial crisis and the fallout from all of that. And, you know, part of what my job was working with all those different things. And it presents in a way that, like, because everyone asks me, like, oh, what happened? It's not
let
easy
me
to
sit
explain.
You down
like,
and explain.
I was a lawyer that got paid X amount to work on it. Yeah. Like, that's because it was difficult to understand. That's how I got so messed up in the first place, is most people don't understand how it works. It does break it down and shows you the personalities. That's the other thing I love. That is one of my favorite performances from Christian Bale in The Big Short, because he plays that goofy investor that is just like, what do you mean, man? I just want to listen to heavy metal. So, anyways, sorry, sidetrack.
Yes, but yeah, the flashbacks were dealt with really well in Doctor Sleep, and like I say, the pacing of it was really good because it is slow and it is long, but it gathers pace when it needs to. You know,
Becky is the litmus test, and this is not because my wife hates film. Like, it's just the opposite. Like, she likes good film. Mm. She won't watch everything. Mm. You know, you show her an indie film. I showed her The Stylist with her dad, and they just looked at me. And I'm like, you do know the director of this is like kind of a friend of mine, and she won a bunch of awards. Like, it sucked. And I'm like, you guys suck.
Right. I mean,
that's how that goes. Yeah. Unfortunately, when you're dealing with like independent filmmakers versus the match, it's like, it sucked. You suck.
A lot of films. We like, love. We enjoy, and we see
are
a lot of art.
Slow as molasses to some people.
Yeah, they're not for everyone, you know. So. And this one, I think, does such a great job of really, even though it is quite harrowing, and it is scary in moments, I don't think it ever goes too far. I think you as a parent... massively impacted
by
that
didn't,
scene.
But they didn't... It was the screaming. Like... Mm. And it's a very necessary... It's just good acting by that kid, to be honest.
Yeah. And I've seen him in other stuff.
Because
so.
They didn't... You know, the knife, as they're doing the knife, is low. Like, they're not... Yeah. They're not inviscerating the kid in front of you. Yeah, yeah. That would have really done it for me. Yeah. You know, then they muted at the end as well when he's like really dead. And you know what I mean? It was necessary because you do have to hate these characters. They have to look like vampires to you because you need, they're all going to die and you need to be okay with that. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's worse that they don't do something like that. We had that in another film that we watched recently. And I think I told you about this. I'm like, which one was it that we were like, oh, like, you know, we didn't really you just didn't have any sympathy for the people. It was like, just let the killers kill them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because we didn't care. I can't remember which one it was. But it just, you have to establish that that's the save the cat. You have you know, you have to make, that's where I came up with, oh, I can't even remember the line. I can't even come up with the line I coined.
Oh, that was so good. We need to dig that out.
I'll dig it out of my, I'm the only one who listens to my podcast anyway, so I'll just go back. Really hit my stride in episode 75.
Yeah, that's right.
That was like, my brother-in-law had the best comment with that. He was like, you're still doing the podcast? I was like, oh, fuck off. Yes.
Absolutely.
We have 20 listeners, you know, they love us every week.
That's right.
Every week, baby. So, yeah, I mean, no, there was the right level on this. That's what I mean. And it didn't come off as, even it comes off this way. Mm. It the movie, mm. IT, the movie, you know, comes off sometimes as hokey or cookie cutter for the sake of making a movie.
Yeah.
This doesn't do that. Like, it deliberately goes the other way sometimes. Mm. It makes it kind of grimmer. The dad dying, the there's all these scenes when it's like, you know, I love the realism of like when they finally meet Danny and Abra together and like, I'm going to fucking kill you, talking to my daughter. And I was like, yeah, that's how that would go down. There's not going to be this understanding, because that's how it sometimes goes. Like, oh, this is my friend. Oh, this is your friend Danny. Danny, it's so good to meet you. Like, no. You show up. Like,
hello, 50-year-old man.
13-year-old girl, 50-year-old guy, and shows up. This is my friend. I'm like, I'm gonna kill you, like literally kill you where you stand. Yeah.
And the villains in this were great. Like, you know, when you start to kind of realize what they're doing, where they're kind of, you know, eating the shining of people and stuff like that, it makes them really sinister.
And only other thing, and I guess you had to do it, maybe it's how it's described in the book. It was the only other thing. I wanted it to be gorier.
Okay, it didn't bother me because I saw it as a smart. More people will come to watch this.
Yeah, it's very a 15. Clever. Very
it's a 15.
That's pretty cool, right?
Yeah, that's kind of crazy. I mean, very, very smart. Very smart.
It was ever so slight. That was like, because then I was like, I guess it works though, doesn't it? Because it's like, then they can carry around these little jars and
yeah.
this little thing. Again, like, I have a hard time sometimes adopting the mythos or something like that because I'm always a thinker and I'm always like, I don't know, that would really
Do you know work. What? It's funny. It almost feels like a Stephen King horror movie, but of the superhero, like, time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. It's like someone took a Stephen King story. It's not like someone. This is exactly
literally what
Mike
happened.
Flanagan did. And he took it and he made it so it was more suitable for a modern audience, which is just slightly more postmodern than Stephen King's writing is. Because Stephen, you know, you're not too old guy, but, you know, obviously he's been doing this forever. You know, some of my favorite stuff is Stephen King's teenager stuff. Like, he wasn't a teenager, 20, 30-year-old. Before he recognized he was an alcoholic.
Like Cujo and stuff like
Cujo
that?
Cujo and, like, you know, The Gunslinger, because he openly admits that whole set of books. I read the first six. Like, it's a mess.
Yeah,
but it's a hot mess. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, it's clearly this guy trying to spill his thoughts out onto a page.
Did you watch The Tower?
I didn't. And I should either. Because somebody I know, someone I like as an actress is in there.
Maybe we'll watch it and we'll talk about it on a podcast one day.
Is it that bad?
I haven't seen it. That's the thing. Okay. But I was like all over that shit.
Matthew McConaughey. Yeah, that's my guy.
Western with a bit of sci-fi mixed in and, you know, stuff like that.
The problem is, like, the story of the gunslinger itself is so convoluted and confusing that, like, most people, even people who read all the books, like, really...
I read the first one and I was really confused. And then I started reading the second one and I was like, oh, okay, this is kind of where it starts.
They really, like, I know... It's really funny because I've read two different versions of the first book as well. And like,
I really liked the first one.
The really funny thing is, like, I actually liked, I had an old version that I was given in Korea. Mm. So this is going way back when. The first time I ever read it was in Korea because my roommate, I don't even remember, Aaron, there we go. Uh-huh. Sorry, I was about to say the wrong name. I'm like, he was my roommate, he's a good friend of mine. I don't want to screw up his name on air. Like, Aaron, my buddy at the time, he was like, have you read this?
And
we were always talking about books. And he's like, no, I've never read The Gunslinger. He's like, dude, you have to read The Gunslinger. Like, it's a classic.
Yeah.
And I read it, and it was just a 70s trip. Like, it was really trippy.
Yeah.
And then I read another version that had been done of it more recently,
yeah.
where he fills in a lot of the gaps.
Interesting.
And it was like, okay, but... I still say, if you want to read that series, start with the Book of Three, which is the second one.
Okay.
Not the Book of Three. The Binding of Three. Whatever the second book is,
it
makes a hell of a lot more sense than the first one. You don't really need anything from the first one yet. Read that, and then go back and read The Gunslinger. And then you'll be like, okay, now I'm kind of getting this now.
The Dr. Sleep novel is from 2013.
So it's a recent novel.
But it's still like,
I think I remember when this came out then. It was a big deal for him because he was like, oh, Stephen King's got a new release. You know, it's really hot. I don't know. I'm tempted to read it now. You know what I mean?
I've got to say, me too. I definitely want to watch the director's cut. And then I might give the book a try, because
yeah, it's just, it's going to fill in, you know, for guys like us, it fills
I should
in
the, read The Shining as
it
well.
It fills in the bits that you want to know. The only thing, like I said, the reason I hesitate to say everybody watch Director's Cut is because, like, you really don't need it, so. Yeah,
and it's an extra half hour.
It's an extra half hour, right? So if you don't, like, if you felt satisfied at the end of the first one, then fine. If you feel like, I just want to know just a little bit more about this and watch it again, then watch the Director's Cut. Yeah, it's a perfect way to do it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Absolutely. Music in the show, did it jump out at you? Was it
music was interesting because I looked at the credits for this. They use a lot of old songs and stuff like that. So music is very selected. The sound design on this one is not as memorable as on some other stuff, but they do pick and choose their moments. So some of my favorite music bits are probably like the snake bite scene. I think is really well done with the old time, because they're trying to tell you a little bit about her character. She's a really weird one, and that's something in the book I'm sure there's a bit more detail about, because she's only 15 and it's clear that she had something happen to her. You don't really know. And she just plays this really young kind of like she's the perfect lure for Rosie the Hat, because she comes across as someone who wants to be perpetually young. That's why she lives in these old films, you know what I mean?
One thing that I did bump with, though, where it was like, okay, so she obviously like tries to get back at you know, pedophiles and stuff like that, but then she kind of goes and murders children and stuff, and I was like, oh, well, I guess it was too late by then. Like,
that's right. So I think
I did bump with it a little
and
bit.
I think that's sometimes where the timing, like, you almost need more time to establish her going bad, you know what I mean? That's you have to remember, between that opening bit and then the next, I think there's that 8-year gap.
Right, I think you're absolutely
so
right.
8 years they're on the road doing this kind of thing, and she'll die otherwise. And why, like, again, it's interesting, because I'm not always a person that'll jump on the bandwagon and go along with it, but it was like, okay, for the sake of this story, like...
Yeah, like, suspension of disbelief.
You know, again, because these are very wealthy, rich people that drive around in caravans all day.
That was a line where I was like... They're wealthy and well-connected. And I'm like, really?
They live in a trailer park, you know, like...
It doesn't seem that way, but okay.
It is what we do say about the travelers over here. You know, it's always said on everyone's breath, like, they got loads of money. They just hide in those caravans, you know? Like, okay.
Budget wise, 30 to 55 million. It's right in that kind of mid range thing that doesn't exist much these days.
And that kind of leads us to, like, not a criticism, just my sadness over this film. My sadness over this film, guys, and I am really sad about this, is you're not going to see films like this moving forward. There's just not a market for it. So, biggest thing Variety was talking about this week, they were all upset about, is there was a 62% drop, and, you know, and from 2019 to now in box office sales. We only grossed, like, you know, it was $41.7 billion or something total for the year.
Big drop.
Which is a huge drop, you know. And the problem is, yes, that hits the studios right in the gut, but this is why we keep trying to tell the studios, you need to develop more. Like, not just the big tent stuff, because otherwise you're going to shoehorn yourself in there, and then all of a sudden nobody
make
else...
Or break.
It's make or break every time, and it's not... You can't make it every time. It just doesn't work that way. Even the best films, they're all made on point. One of them will fail because it's released at the wrong time, or
because
the weather's bad that week and people didn't go. And so... This is the thing, that's not how art works. And so my problem is the art and the business are diverging quite a bit. And if you don't get any new talent, then it'll just disappear. So do I really think it'll just completely disappear? No, I just think we could go through like a lean decade or something like that, where all of a sudden you just can't find this stuff.
I think it comes back exactly to what you were saying earlier on with Lovecraft and Watchmen, in that a lot of this stuff is going to end up on streaming services. And it's not gonna get the exposure that.
And that's where the businessman in me comes on. Like, I do not agree with Netflix's strategy. I never have. They hide their numbers, which is the first sign to me. And sorry, this is kind of what I do for a living.
Bubble.
But do you know what I mean? But never hide anything from me, because that's a sure sign that you're not telling me the truth.
Right.
Because if you didn't need to hide numbers, then you wouldn't.
Right.
Because you would just show people and say, look at all this coolness we got. You hide the numbers because they may not necessarily say exactly what you wanted to say. In the business world, this is where you see all these companies have this adjusted EBITDA, which is a way of talking about the profits the way they want to talk about them, as opposed to the way you're supposed to talk about them in accounting, so that you can understand just how bad things are. And this is the problem. And this is the only company that I can think of that goes to that 30 to 50 mark, takes stuff from it, and throws it on the walls to see if it sticks. And if it sticks, they give you a sequel. If it doesn't stick, then you go somewhere else. And the problem is, when that whole sham, no offense Netflix, crashes, because it will, it has to at some point, then where's the market for the 30 to 50?
Yeah.
Who's going to pay money? Disney won't do it because Disney's got enough money, you know, in the big stuff.
They've set up their like little corner of the universe, and yeah, they don't need.
You know, Time Warner, can they do it? Do they have enough diversity to offer that to people and say we can handle making a 30-50 that only makes 75 or 80?
This was Warner Brothers, I believe.
So they are, you know, supposedly, because I hear this, I hear things, you know, I hear things that they are some of the best with that level. But again, like this one didn't make a bunch of money in the box office. This was panned, you know, critics loved it, didn't make any box office numbers. How much did it make?
72.3.
Exactly. So unfortunately for Warner Brothers, they're like, oh, we need more than that. And it's like, well, that's the problem. Like you got to be taking, you know, 20 million is still 20 million. Where can you divert things to do that? But, you know, Warner Brothers, Paramount, like all of them, I just see them as not seeing this as a viable thing for them.
Yeah, it does feel like, you know, with just the noise that these streaming services are making with just, you know, like you say, throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks, along with, you know, HBO Max developing... HBO developing theirs, and like everyone's going to want to have a streaming service.
Well, and there are rays of light. You know, I do go back to Last Night in Soho. That's a working title production. Naira Park, please hire us. I'll say it again. Naira Park, please hire us. And I do love the stuff that they do. You know, you've got me kind of on their bandwagon again, because I just was like, they are an English studio. They are probably the only one I can think of. And they picked up Edgar's thing. Now, obviously that's a bit, you know, it's not, they're not really going indie with Edgar, because it's like, well, he and Working Title have had a good relationship for a very long time. Yeah. But if more of that can happen, and if Edgar can go out, and I think he will, this is another reason I wanted you to not meet him, but like see him talk, because again, it's sometimes it's just his presence. Like guys like that can go out and find guys like us, not us, but if you want it to be us, that'd be great. You know, and find new directors and new people that are coming up with stuff, then fine, then it'll be okay, because that got distributed by Universal.
Right.
And so fine, leave it to the big studios to distribute at the end and figure out the marketing.
In fact, Warner Brothers distributed this. This was Vertigo and Intrepid. Vertigo is owned by someone.
That's right. So that's fine. You know what I mean? If we can go through that model and it still happens, I just see problems in it at the moment because you keep seeing all this box office bluster. And so if the distributors pull away, then we've got a problem.
And, you know, like Spider-Man like made all the money, didn't it? Like, and his current...
I just loved it. It made $4 billion even though it wasn't even allowed in China. And I was just like, ha-ha. Sorry, I find that trade war is ridiculous. Like, please don't involve art in your ridiculous trade war with my country. You know, like, you're both idiots.
But yeah, it is a shame that this... Because this feels like it would have been a pretty big hit if it had managed to roll out, you know, on a lot of screens and stuff like that.
And this is what I'm saying. So, and I guess maybe that's the other thing. So I go to the Cineplex every week, right? And that's the other problem that I notice. And I noticed it in the last couple of weeks. We have a bunch of blockbusters out, but like, for example, I'm not going to get to see, I don't even know if The Matrix was done on an IMAX, but you can't get anything into the screens on a big screen that's not Spider-Man right now. Why? Because it's pulling in the numbers. So everybody else has got two or three screens. I think I'm seeing The Matrix tomorrow on like a 2D something, because it was like all that was there.
I will say Disney can be a bit... Sorry, Disney. Please still hire us if you can. But they can be a bit shitty with like smaller theaters and stuff like that. Like ours only has two screens, right? And they're like, well, Spider-Man's got to be on both screens for like 4 weeks.
Yeah, kind of thing, they did the same thing with Black Widow, if I remember. And that's the problem. Like the theater is still the theater, guys. Like you still need... I wouldn't mind if you have two of the big, you know, your big screens, two of your big screens are taken up, and then there's a couple other mid-range, and then some, maybe one or two, you know, doesn't even have to be indie. Go to the Curzon if you want indie. You know what I mean? That's fine. There's different cinemas for that. Yeah. But this mid-range stuff, like, it's good film.
It is.
Good cinema. And if we take it out, like, unfortunately, the 80s is when we had lots of this good stuff. But nowadays, it's like, you know, it's hit or miss because there's just no spec script, you know, development anymore.
Yeah.
And I just, I don't know, we've been saying it for probably, you know, now that I think about it, we have been crying this for like 20 years, you know, because spec scripts died in the 90s.
And this isn't even, like, this is a kind of pre-established franchise, I guess, in a way.
So it's not spec,
No, but
the budget we know is just, exactly. You know, it's one of those things. It's why you're so surprised when you see a Denis Villeneuve. That's why I was so taken aback by the fact that this guy was making films at that budget range that people were watching, and he was getting accolades for it. I was like, that's how it should be for a lot of directors. It's just the rug's been pulled out from a lot of people in that way. So I guess the message is, you know, please tell your local studio or whatever it is that we need to keep those types of films going, because otherwise they're going to get relegated to Netflix and they will be completely forgettable.
And your local cinemas as well. Like,
please go out, guys. Like, that's the other thing. It's like, people are like, oh, I could just watch it at home and streaming. Like, it's not the same.
It really isn't. It really isn't.
Take it from, I say, I go every week. Why? How long did I start doing that now? Like, a long time ago.
Maybe.
You know?
Yeah, something like that.
Whenever I got that pass, and it was like, I'm a producer, I need to see what's in the theaters. And I'm telling you, that makes my week, usually. You know what I mean? That's something I love.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. That's all I would say. And I'm not saying you have to do the big multiplex. As I said, saw Edgar Wright at the Curzon, and now all I want to do is go back to the Curzon, like, every day and watch something there.
Is it the Everyman that you go to sometimes as
well? I do. So this is another good example of the mid-level film that gets cut out, though. We saw West Side Story there, which... Pan, you know, it was a great film, but there's no market for it right now. In the Heights was, you know, the same way. So it's a shame, because you're going to lose a little bit of the art if we don't have a place for these films, because not everybody's going to make a blockbuster for $100 million, nor should they. That's the whole point. Like, that's what I feel Hollywood is missing, is you don't have to make $100 million blockbusters at the time. Like, it just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, and again, I know the talking points, which are, you know, pre-existing audience and, you know, franchisable and stuff like that.
That's where we're sympathetic, because we are very keen on the business side of this. Yeah, you know, me especially, I just found it really interesting. We love that stuff, you know? But I get where you're coming from. Like, when I look at the numbers don't lie. They say exactly what the studios are saying. Like, fine, we'll come out with a Doctor Sleep and then we'll lose money because people won't go to it.
Right.
And because they don't know what we're talking about with this. You know, had that not had the existing franchise, we would have had to pay back money. You know, it would have been like The Last Duel.
Oh, there's always a dig at Ridley on this podcast.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I loved it. I'm glad we did it. I probably wouldn't have watched it if we didn't do a podcast on it.
It was, you know, and I only watched it because it was like, Becky was like, let's watch something. Like, I wanted to watch Dr. Sleep. You finally watched that with me? And it was like, okay, if you're recommending a film or you're saying you want to watch a film, then sure. Again, like, that's because the litmus test is, it's not because my wife doesn't like film. I didn't finish that thought, did I? It's because, like, she can't stay awake. Like, she's not a night person. Yeah. So we finished with the kid at 8.
Yeah.
We were just having this conversation with my brother-in-law and stuff, because you have these conversations with other parents and they start realizing it's the same for them. You're like, it's okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, we get Catherine in bed at 8, so we have at least an hour together before my wife is too tired to stay up anymore, passes out, and like... So this one, it was like 10:30. I was like, we have this joke that she turns into a pumpkin after 10. And I was like, you're not a pumpkin.
Yeah, that's great, though. I mean, like, I was gripped as well.
So, and again, Rebecca Ferguson, I don't think most people need to be put on the bandwagon but me, but this did put me on the bandwagon for her. I said, you know what? Acting chops in this were amazing. Yeah. She comes across as this really fun but sinister character. If she can pull that off with, you know, Lady Atreides, oh man, it's going to be really good.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited for that. I'm excited for Obi-Wan with Ewan McGregor as well.
A quick pissed off at this. I'm always pissed off at someone. Today I'm pissed off at Polygon because you are, like, slowly with your headlines ruining The Matrix for me, the new one.
Oh, no.
Because it keeps talking about video games, you know? Mm. Are we all living in a video game? I'm like, here we go. It's commentary about video games, isn't it? And it's like, it's not going to give me the whole plot, but I'm like, could you just let me go in blind? Can you just let me go in and discover it myself?
Isn't it?
No, it's not. No, sorry. No, I'm the asshole, okay? Let me be the asshole. It's not fucking hard. Don't make an article that lines itself with, like, how The Matrix is a replication of how video games are all over the world. Like, no, you're not being clever. You're not being cute. You're not being anything. You're being an asshole for spoiling the film for all these people. You did it with Game of Thrones. You did it with a billion other things. Stop doing it, people in publishing. Thank you. I'm done.
I guess what I mean is that, you know, with Facebook and everything, it's...
I guess the argument is, if it's not the article, it'll be your friends.
But
I can avoid my friends. Man, I'm good at avoiding my friends. But no, it's just, you know, I go read the news in the morning. I'm like, please, could you not? I mean, Game of Thrones was like, I knew that movie. I took a long time before I actually watched it. I almost want to go out and watch it again now, because I have it in UHD.
Oh.
That was what I got for Christmas. I got the Matrix Trilogy UHD.
Ooh. Nice.
Cherry. And the thing
is
was...
Is that even going to get a rewatch of Matrix 3, Revolutions?
This is where I'm at, because I just watched the first one. And you don't understand how many times I go to watch the trilogy, and I've watched the first one and don't continue on. So I have watched the first Matrix, like... Again, like Frozen, like 100 times. Because I'm always on, like, I'm going to do it. Because I have the old box set. I have, The Matrix is one of, I mean, you can watch the top 10, we did the podcast on it. It is one of my favorite films of all time. Yeah. And I bought, they had this old box set that was a green one. It had 9 discs. Mm. And it was the first time that people did, like, the Wachowskis were awesome. They did all this behind the scenes stuff, which I kind of need to go back and watch it all. But then it has the animatrix and it has all this. I always plan to go from disc 1 to disc 9. I usually got to disc 2, which was the Matrix Revisited, which is the, you know, the behind the scenes on the original.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I might have made it to the animatrix. Mm. Never made it past that. And I'd be like, oh, I gotta try it again. And I can never start on the second one. So this time I'm saying, screw it.
Mm.
Like, I'm not watching the first one. Mm. I will watch the first one at a different time in my life.
Wow.
I'm gonna go straight to Matrix Reloaded.
Okay.
On UHD, because I love the car chase. And I'm like, man, that's gonna look dope. Plum. It's gonna be like squeegee clean.
That's gonna be nice. That's gonna be very, very nice.
And I started remembering where I watch things on my PlayStation too. Because, like, my wife and my kid are funny. Like, this is what happens when you have a family and you have tech. Like, I have an Apple box.
Mm.
I have a nice TV. I have a PlayStation 5. Obviously, the great graphics comes off the PlayStation first. But then the Apple has a pretty good 4K.
It does look very nice.
Yeah. The TV has a lot of... It's an LG, and it is a 1080, and blah, blah, you know, or an OLED. Like, it's got the whole 9 yards, but it's a direct feed into there.
Mm.
So every time I'm with these guys, they're watching Netflix off the TV, and I'm like, we have 2 systems that will upgrade this into nice 4K shiny HDR true color quality, and you're watching this. They're like, that's just easier. I'm like, oh, I hate you guys. And they always laugh because I'm always getting off, you know, that and subtitles are the 2 things in my head. No English subtitles. You're meant to look at the people, not watch, not read them. It's the worst thing. I mean, my daughter's like, Dad, I just like reading the subtitles. What's wrong with you?
It's really helped me with The Witcher, though, I gotta say. Like, having the subtitles
on. Accents in that one.
It's just like, there's just a lot going on, and I forget names and stuff like that.
So. I've had a lot of call center where I need subtitles at this point. Me to them half the time, because it's like, you said this, they're like, I did not say that. I know I have an American accent, but that's not the words I used. So I mean, I guess, yeah, in conclusion, I think we get to conclusions here. It's 10 o'clock over here. So we're in conclusions. Yeah, it's a good film. It's worthwhile.
Very good film.
I'm not sure, again, you know, where we go back to some of our roots where we're talking about filmmaking and kind of like what we're doing. The reason we didn't have much of an update, it's Christmas, guys, so we haven't really done much in the studio. Ed's going to be reading 3/4 of a script that I finished and sent over to him because I couldn't stand it any longer, him not having any input on it. But this is not one I don't think... I think the classic stuff is there, so if you want to see adaptation, read the book and then see how he did it from the book. You can do that with anything, though, so I don't necessarily think this is the way. Dune, I think it's a better one to read and look at adaptation. But, you know,
I think this is a good date night movie.
It's just a good classic. That's what I mean. Good classic film. Not thrillery, not really. You know, watch your Paul Thomas Andersons if you want some director's advice. But this one is just like, just enjoy
it. It's just a good film. Sit,
watch the film, like it. Obviously, that means that the story is pretty good. But the story is adapted from Stephen King. So I can't tell you, like, oh, there you can go. You make yourself creative. Like, no, you can steal someone else's good story. which is another thing. Talking about Working Title, it is one of the best things they do at Working Title. I mean, the story of Naira Park. Was it Naira Park that found Harry Potter?
So Naira Park is Edgar Wright's kind of producer. But the guy who's been running Working Title for a long time is Richard Curtis.
That's right. And I could have sworn it's at the Harry Potter studios.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And I believe, and I could be completely wrong on this, so someone in the comments correct this is wrong if you've been to Harry Potter studios and seen this particular video. But in the video, they're talking about how they were all sitting around a production meeting, and Naira had just started working as a production assistant for Working Title. And they were all sitting around talking about new things. She said, I just spent the weekend reading this weird book. And they were like, well, what's the book? And they're like, it's called Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so they're like, oh, what is it? And like, no one knew back then that it was going to be this like overnight success. Mm. But that's how it happens. Like, someone reads the book and says, we're going
to
do
to your PAs.
No, it's what everybody should be doing. So if you're running production, if you're thinking of ideas, you need to be reading as well, because that's another source for you. Okay, so I did give a tip today. It's another source for you to pick up stuff. Constantly 100%. Be reading fiction.
Mm.
Just so you know, you never know. And read fiction that other people aren't reading is what I would say. That's the other thing. Everybody goes to these bestsellers. I'm like, the rights to buy a bestseller are going to be up there, mate. Just fucking up there. Find something that you like that no one else is reading at the moment. And then you can get the rights so you can make the movie. You know what I mean? So
absolutely.
But Dr. Sleep, date night. Yeah. Get yourself a girl or a boy or both, if that's what you do. Or something in between. You know, it's all about non-binary these days. So, you know, grab it, sit on the couch, watch this one. And he won't put you to sleep.
Absolutely.
But until next time, folks, I don't know. What are we doing next week?
I'm not sure. We haven't decided.
No.
I'm sure we have.
Is The Matrix playing at your place?
It might be. If it is, you want to do it?
Yeah, we can do The Matrix. I'm going to see it tomorrow. So yeah, for sure. I do love The Matrix.
Yeah, I'll check it out.
Hope so next week, The Matrix, everybody. Enjoy. Hope you enjoyed this one. Hope everyone's having a merry, merry Christmas holiday. And you will have a happy new year by the time you probably hear this. So, and we will see you all in the new year. Until that time.